Welcome. This is Garden Fork Radio. I'm already messing up the introduction here. So, hey, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. Thanks for downloading the show. It's me, Eric, with my eclectic friends. We talk about how to do stuff, DIY, cooking, gardening. I also have a YouTube channel of the kind of the same stuff if this is your first time here. Today, my friend Eric from Root Simple is here. So if you've been on listening to the show for a while, this is West Coast Eric. Welcome, sir.
Hello, East Coast Eric.
We have an amazing Skype connection here. I'm in New York and you're in LA and it sounds like you're next door.
Yeah, it's pretty cool technology, isn't it?
If you're thinking about starting a podcast, just email me, radio@gardenfork.tv, and I will show you how. It's pretty simple. And if I can have a podcast, everyone can, right? So you also have a podcast called the Root Simple Podcast and a website called Root Simple.
Indeed. We've been a little sporadic with the podcast lately, which is why we're having you on our podcast.
You're just using me. So today I wanted to talk to Eric about, I actually subscribe to his email. You can sign up for his email alerts on his website to when he posts new things on his website. And well, I'll let you tell the story. Basically, it's gone from some simple handyman work to building is it a Stickley Mission chair, a Stickley American Craftsman chair? This amazing looking chair you built.
Yeah, thanks. It was one of my projects maybe a few weeks ago that I just finished, which was a Stickley Bow Arm Morris chair.
Wow. It's a beautiful. I mean, I've seen them. I have some Stickley knockoffs, which I sent you a picture of, and they're great. Actually, one of them is my meditation chair. The rocker is my meditation chair. But, so start from the beginning. You were renovating your house and you had to make some trim or something. Was that it?
Well, I've been renovating this house since 1998, actually. So it's been a long haul. And I've always been kind of a mediocre handyman, let's say. And, this house really required a lot of work. It's almost 100 years old now, and when we got it, was in really horrible condition. So kind of the first wave of that was we had to actually hire people to work on the foundation and do some other stuff. And, I fixed things here and there. I even put in a wood floor, actually, in the living room. Maybe 15 years ago now. But I decided, I guess it was 3, maybe 4 years ago now, that I really wanted to specialize in woodwork and kind of up my skill level so that I could actually make furniture, as well as work on some of the trim carpentry and some of the more challenging jobs around the house. And I got to say, I'm got a lot of eclectic interests, but I just decided, okay, I'm going to focus on this for a while, on this one skill.
What's that
and
like?
See, well, it's hard. I mean, my gym is right next to the central library. So I often will like pop over there and look at all the do-it-yourself books. And I had to really just like, okay, you're not allowed to look at this other stuff. You're just going to look at the woodworking and carpentry section of the library and focus on that for a while and see what happens, as well as take some classes. So I did that too.
Where are the classes offered?
Well, luckily for me, there's a place called Community Woodshop that's just a short hop away from our house. And it's one of these places where they have classes, mm-hmm. but also you can rent time in the shop. I didn't end up doing that. I ended up putting together my own shop, but the classes were really, really great. They had a basic safety class that I took that was actually a lot more informative than I thought it would be.
Because
it was
also lose a finger.
Yeah. How not to lose a finger, but also actually like how to use all the tools. They went over that too. So it was very informative. And then I took another class where we made a simple mallet. There were a number of skills that you learned doing that. And then I took a make a small box class and kind of took it from there. And then I started working in my own little shop and building my own little shop at home.
Does the making of the box, was that like a dovetail joint box or a simple, like mortise and what called mortise and tenon joints or just corner joints or?
Yeah, it was a, what you call a miter joint, but reinforced with what's called a spline, which would be easier to show than to explain. Yeah. But basically, it's a miter joint with this reinforcement. And then it was a box within a box. So the class was, not really about the object itself, but about learning skills. In this case, it was how to use a table saw and how to use a few hand tools along with that to get this thing to fit because it was pretty intricate.
Wow.
And that's the thing about making furniture is that the tolerances are a lot smaller than like framing a house or something like that. That's a skill in itself, but this is a little different.
This might be why they call a chop saw a chop saw. So.
Right. So I learned chop saw is not for making boxes with. You use a table saw for that. Actually, I learned a way to make this kind of like sled-like device for the table saw to cut 90-degree angles. That was one of the things I learned in that box class.
I've seen those people make those sleds in some of the woodworking videos I've watched. The gentleman was a channel called Make Something, YouTube channel, has built that. And I was often curious why it just looked like an easier way to push the wood through the table saw, but it actually does something.
Yeah, there's different, this is one of the things that makes woodworking confusing is that there's 10 different ways to do everything. A chop saw just isn't accurate enough unless there are like very super expensive chop saws from Festool, which is a, German tool maker that makes one that will actually make an accurate 90 degree cut. And then table saws come with this little attachment thing that you can use to make the same kind of 90 degree cuts, but they're actually not very accurate. So you have to make this sled thing because, if you're putting together a box, it's got to fit. It's got to be perfect or it won't fit together. And so this sled thing ensures that you get that perfect cut.
So then you built a shop in your garage, but you don't have a very big garage. It's not like this giant layout.
Yeah, no. And that was super challenging too, because I had to figure out, okay, what am I going to build? What tools do I need to do this? And then how do I squeeze it into this weird, we have this 1920 house that has a 1922 car Model T garage. And Model Ts, I learned, are very small. They're the size of a subcompact car. So that's kind of what I have is two-car garage, but a very small two-car garage. And the house is on the hill. And the garage is right on the sidewalk, which is kind of a fun part of it because I get to meet the neighbors and chat and meet all the dogs being walked and all that. That's kind of a fun part of my little shop. But
I would be bumping by a lot. Hey.
Exactly. Well, that's Kelly accuses me of not really doing woodworking there, but just, chatting with people. I had to set the shop up. And it's very small, so I have to make careful decisions about what goes in there. And, to be honest, I wish that I had done this when we bought the house because it's been super handy to, know where every tool is so that when I need to fix something, I can just grab it. And then also to have, a proper workbench for woodworking, which is just, a substantial wooden table.
Yeah.
With hold downs and vices, but specifically for woodworking. And that's been super handy, not just for making furniture, but for working on doors and windows and the other things you have to do when you own an old house.
Didn't you use SketchUp to try and lay out this in the garage?
I did use SketchUp. And SketchUp, of course, is a really handy tool that is free, or there's a free version, I should say. And it's a 3D modeling program. So I'll tend to use that when I'm laying something out in the house or want to visualize something, or even when I'm just making a box and don't want to, you know, kind of make mistakes with the construction of it. As a teacher I had here recently said, always have a plan.
I think what's that like?
Yeah, exactly. But it's good advice. When I've tried to wing these things, is that's when bad things happen. But yeah, I use SketchUp to lay out this very small space. And, you know, to be honest, it the first pass, not quite right. So I had to redo things a little bit, rejigger things, got a few more tools, so I had to do it again. And I'm actually, it's close. It's not quite exactly the way I want it yet. So I'm going to work a little bit more on some layout and maybe remake things. I've found actually another thing is that if the workshop is attractive and inspiring, I want to be down there working. So I'm going to tweak it a little more to make it a little, I don't know, a little more. I mean, it's nice, but right. I want to make it a little nicer. And then like if people have started hanging out there, which is neighbors will come in. I've actually, people have come over for like a beer and stuff. So I thought of like, you know, why don't I make it so it's even a little bit more hangoutable as well as being a functional space.
I'm curious about the SketchUp. I looked at it and of course got overwhelmed immediately, but was it hard? How did you learn? Do they have tutorials? Or you went to YouTube or?
Well, as usual, I jumped right into it and got frustrated and and then realized, oh, you should watch the tutorial videos. And there's a series of tutorial videos. And if you want to learn it, you really should just sit down. And it takes a few evenings, but it's not super hard to use. And sit down, watch those videos, play around with it, and it's become a very handy tool. Now, I will say I'm big on drawing on paper because I'm old. So I often, if I'm sketching out an idea, I'll draw it on paper first, and then I'll go to SketchUp. And, you know, SketchUp, what SketchUp does, which is really nice, is give you precise measurements for things so that then you can take it down to the workshop and make your cuts and know that you're not going to come out with one side being too long and not fitting.
Could I use SketchUp to design my newer, this theoretical plywood boat I've been talking about for 3 years, and then output like instructions to cut it, the plywood out on a CNC machine?
That's something I don't know super well.
Okay.
There's a friend of mine who does architectural rendering. He knows all about that. He's done CNC stuff, but I have not done CNC stuff. So I think there's some extra steps to do. And I don't know whether the free version or not will do that or not. It might. I'd have to look that up. So I don't really know.
There's a makerspace here that I just discovered that is about 13 blocks from my house. Hello. And I'm going to take a welding class there, but they also have a CNC machine on a 4x8 table, and you have to be super qualified to use it, but you can also hire one of the people that works there to run a file for you. You know, you show up at the plywood, hand them the file on a thumb drive, and they'll set it all up and go, you know, run the machine. So I'm very intrigued. My idea is to design a simple plywood boat and then have the cut file, people could download it and take it to their local maker space.
That's cool. And there'll be a video, I'm sure.
There'll be several, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my idea. So I am fascinated by SketchUp. I just have to sit down. I guess I have to have a real motivational reason for learning it. And right now I don't, but who knows? That'll check a change tomorrow.
Well, I mean, one thing is that I need to do, too, is I have done full renderings of various rooms in the house, and I've thought about doing the entire house so that when it comes time, I mean, even if you're just moving furniture around or something, it's kind of handy because you can see what it's going to look like before you lug the stuff around. So it's probably a good idea if you get into it to just do a SketchUp drawing of the whole house that you have or your apartment or whatever. So,
hey, real quick here. I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast app, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right? Thank you. So we've built our nice shop. It is beer friendly, the shop now.
Hopefully.
What happens next?
Well, what happened next was I am obsessed with arts and crafts furniture.
No.
Which is here's the thing about it, which is funny, is it's out of fashion right now. And it's really expensive if you want to buy actual antiques.
Yes.
So I thought, well, why spend the money on something no one wants? Why not try to make it yourself? And all these pieces of furniture in the public domain now, there's books, there's plans online, you can download them. So that's what I started doing. So I built my little mallet at the class. Then I built a box, like I said. And then the next thing I did was I made a little tiny stickly tabouret. It's called a little side table.
Oh, I saw that. Like, I saw it on your site. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that would be a good first project because it had a few joints, mortise and tenon joints in it, and a round table top. And, you know, I had to learn how to finish it, which was actually one of the more challenging parts of the project. But I thought it would be a good first project. And it turned out okay. Not perfect, but okay.
Did you use the quarter sawn oak?
Yeah, so that's another thing that with this particular style of furniture, it's all quarter sawn white oak, which I guess I could explain. It's a way of cutting the wood that leaves a very straight grain and also reveals this kind of, they're called medullary rays. So this very pretty pattern on the wood when you cut it that way. And this particular style of furniture is all basically all white oak, which actually makes it easy when I go to the lumber yard because I'm not, you know, confused by all the choices. I can just go straight to the white oak pile and start looking through that and work just with that. And I've kind of gotten to know how that particular wood behaves, which is actually generally, it's pretty easy to work with because it doesn't expand and contract a lot. And it's pretty predictable. Not always, but it's fairly easy to use, and it looks really, really pretty, I think. And this particular furniture is really dependent on that ray pattern.
Right.
It's all about the ray pattern. If you try making it with some other wood, it ends up looking kind of crude, honestly.
What kind of problems, challenges did you run into with the finishing of that?
Oh, my God, all kinds. So I was doing some Stickley pieces, and Stickley was a famous furniture designer from around 1900 in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
And he had actually a very, very complicated finishing method that I'm not sure they were sort of trade secrets too. So I'm not sure people know exactly how he did some of his pieces. One method was by fuming them with ammonia.
Oh yeah.
So you take ammonia and you put the furniture in a box or a plastic tarp with a bowl of ammonia, and that darkens the wood. So I tried that. Actually, the little table I fumed, and it came out okay, but it's a difficult process. It's predictable, and you know, it's a little nerve-wracking because you put all this work into the piece and then you fume it and you worry like, am I fuming it enough and not fuming it quite enough? And then it still needs to be tinted too. So he would tint the pieces, he would fume them and then finish them with shellac and wax. And I ended up doing it and miraculously it turned out okay.
Wow.
But I don't like lurking. It's kind of, ammonia is dangerous. I was working with janitorial ammonia, so it's kind of weak.
Yep.
I didn't really want to use the full strength stuff because that stuff is super dangerous. And I ended up finding a method, thanks to Fine Woodworking Magazine, which is a really tremendous resource, on how to do this with basically with dyes and commercial finishes. So a multi-step process that I've been using instead of using ammonia. Although lately I started doing some English style arts and crafts pieces, which just use oil. So just the natural wood, which I kind of like because it's a lot easier and I like the sort of lighter color to it. So I might do some more of those in the future and fewer of the American style darker pieces.
So is that oil, is that like what they call Danish oil at the hardware store?
Yeah, tongue oil, I think I use. I'm trying to remember that. Yeah, tongue oil is what I use for. I just did a chair, an English-style chair by the architect CFA Voisey. It's kind of a weird, quirky chair with a woven seat. And of all the pieces I've done, that's the one I've been the happiest with. Making a chair is super challenging, but one of the things that I enjoy about it is that in my small shop, you know, a chair is a smaller piece, so it fits on my tiny workbench, and it's just a little easier to maneuver.
Yeah,
I did a dresser and a china cabinet and a bookshelf, and all those pieces were super challenging just because of their size. I mean, they don't fit on my workbench, and you know, trying to spin them around, and they're super heavy too because it's all solid oak. So yeah, I've been enjoying the smaller pieces.
So, and you, I mean, you have not been doing this for years and years and years. You just, you took a couple of classes and you kind of took and ran with it, but you're not, you have, I mean, you're very talented at all sorts of things, but this sounds, you're making it sound very doable.
It is very doable. So I would recommend, yeah, take a few classes. I mean, you know, if a talented woodworker would look at my pieces and see all the flaws in them,
yeah.
Honestly, and I see the flaws in them, most people don't see them. But yeah, take a few classes. And then I'll mention Fine Woodworking again, because they have a website that's behind a paywall. But it's more than worth it if you want to do this kind of thing, because they have hundreds and hundreds of articles going back to the early 1980s that you can access once you pay for the monthly subscription. It's not that much. I can't remember what it is. But they also have hundreds of videos, too.
Yeah.
And they have editors. So it's... they're pretty careful about the information that they put out. If they make a mistake, they correct it, that kind of thing. And so it's really high quality advice. And it's been, in addition to the classes, has been super helpful. I'm actually going to take another class too. I'm taking a hand tools class that Fine Woodworking is putting on in San Diego. So I'm looking forward to that, because I actually use power tools and hand tools together. I kind of replicated the way they made these pieces in the 1900s. So that's, so I do a little of both.
So to circle, talk about hand tools, you had a post, which I just sometimes surf your site and I try and find the random article. So
it's all random.
You should have just a random post generator there.
Yeah. Whatever crazy thing is on my mind.
But you got rid of your pegboards in your shop for specific tool holders. And
yes.
I'm like, no, I want to be able to move it all around again. But
yeah. So, this one of the more controversial posts of late, actually, because there are pegboard adherents out there.
Yikes.
There's a friend of mine who visited my shop in its pegboard phase, named Federico Tabone, who's been on my podcast.
Oh, I heard
him. He's an artist, super, super talented guy. He teaches shop classes to young people, actually. And he looked at my pegboard and he kind of said, do you like that pegboard? And because here's the thing about pegboard is, and I know there are better forms of pegboard, but I had the stuff from the big box store. And honestly, when you go to take a tool off of it, often the little hanger thing would fall out. And they're just not very sturdy. And some of the hand tools are pretty expensive, so I need to make sure they don't fall off the wall. And in Fine Woodworking, they had an article on making specific holders for all your tools. Again, it's easier to see than to describe, right. But basically you take a tool and you draw out the negative space of the tool and you make a hanger specifically for it, or a shelf, or with a lip and that kind of thing. And it's more flexible than you would think, because you can always unscrew the holder off the wall, plywood wall, and make another holder if you mm-hmm. get another different size tool or something like that, or add to it. It's more flexible than you would think, and it's sturdier, so stuff doesn't fall off. The hand planes are super expensive. I don't want those to fall off the wall. The other thing is, it looks nice too, which is, again, part of like wanting to be in the space working. It needs to be pleasant. So I like that part of it too.
And it's a beer conversation piece.
People, their eye goes straight to it. It's weird. They're like, wow, this is super organized. Even though like right now I'm finishing up a bunch of projects. And there's a bunch of scrap wood laying around and crap all over the place. But yeah, the people's eye goes straight to it. And I don't know. They think you know what you're doing, even when you don't.
Yeah, that's how I live. So so to basically to paraphrase all this and wrap up, you've always been kind of handy, but then you took some classes, and then you started small, went bigger, and now you're a fine craftsman.
I wouldn't say that. I'm working up progressively. And I have to say, it has really paid for itself, because when it came time to redo this house for the second time, first of all, I couldn't find people to do work. So I had to do it a lot of it myself. So framing the walls, making door openings from scratch, replicating the molding, making a window completely from scratch, and framing that out, putting in two new hardwood floors. So while I had to invest in education and also invest in tools, I'm pretty sure they've paid for themselves at this point. And I like to think of it as like an old wooden ship would always have a place for the carpenter to work. Mm-hmm. So every old house needs the same thing.
Wow, I never thought of it that way, but yeah. So I can buy a new table saw and just tell my family I'm saving them money.
But yes, but it's actually true.
All right, so rootsimple.com, or the podcast is Root Simple. And if you go there, probably within a week, you'll hear me making a very important announcement on the Root Simple podcast.
Oh yeah, teaser. Teaser.
I have yet to tell my own audience.
Exclusive.
All right. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you, Eric.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz of hollowbooks.com. And our music is licensed from uniquetracks.com.